So, yeah. So, a couple of quick reminders that we talked about this morning in our announcements with the family prayer. One was we're just trying to start to reevaluate what the elementary class could look like. And part of what goes into that is we really want our times that we send our kids to things to be a win, both for the parents and for the kids. And a number of factors, I think, are influencing us wanting to look at that. One is some of the curriculum we've used has been used for a number of years. And I think the kids are going, I think I've heard this lesson, you know, 7 or 8 or 9 times. And so just to freshen up, like, how are we sharing the good news of the word with them? But also just to share, there's challenges there at times, right, with kids and how do we help lead them to a place where they want to be there and it's not kind of this chaotic, rambunctious mess. And so, so again, if you have feedback or thoughts on how we could do that, I think we're trying to think of how can we make this a win for the kids to say, this isn't boring, I want to come, and for the parents, for all of us as parents to say, you know, we're not looking at a class to teach and going, oh no, oh great, I've got to teach that class, that's going to be hard, to go, I'm excited about this, this is going to be great. And so if you have thoughts, feedback, anything along those lines. Second thing I wanted to reiterate, as the Scots are coming in for their training with their team, Brian and Hallie, they've been overseas, they're forming a new team in the Caucasus region. What they are really desirous of, as I talk about needing housing and wanting to do training with them, this is what they're really wanting, is 7 days of those who are going to be on their team to immerse in life here. Okay, so it's not just like we're going to kind of try to host them on the side. Their heart's desire is that as they sleep at other people's houses, as they share meals together, they want to, as much as they can, extract what is happening at Beggar's Gate in a lot of ways into the life of their team of what they're going to be starting. And so when we talk about helping with trainings or hosting people, really what we're talking about is this immersion, enculturation of, we tend to do things a little differently here than a lot of the rest of the world in Christendom. And they really like that, and they want that, and they want to impart that to those that are coming along. And so see that as an opportunity as they come, June 1st through 7th. That's their hope, is it's not just kind of this side program that's happening, that we're wrapping them up into this world that we're in the habits and the rhythms that we're trying to walk in. So just wanted to put that disclaimer out there. We're gonna go back to go forward. So we've been walking through what is Jesus' death and resurrection, rightfully so, as we remember that these last number of weeks. But we weren't quite there as we were walking through the Gospel of John together. And this morning, I think this is maybe one of the most clarifying passages in the Bible of what does it mean that God loves you. If you've ever heard that phrase, which I'm sure at some point you probably have, it's a phrase that's trite and pithy, it's true, but what does that actually mean? Like when it comes down to it, and we're going to look at the story of Lazarus, and fitting that after resurrection we're going to look at a man that says, you know, death, I've been there, done that. He knows what that's like. And this passage to me is so thick with meaning and irony and substance of what God's heart for you is. So to set it up, just to remind ourselves where we've been, where Jesus has been, Pat talked 3 weeks ago about the good shepherd and how sheep and shepherds work together. At the very end of that, as it's been growing the case through this gospel, through Jesus's life, they go, that's really amazing, let's kill him. those that are in power don't like what he's teaching, because he's teaching with authority, he's teaching against the systems and the character of those who are in authority, and he's going against their regulations of how they know life should happen. And so at the end of chapter 10, it says they pick up stones, they're ready to stone him, they're ready to arrest him, he slips out. He that doesn't happen at that time because his hour hasn't come. At the end of chapter 10, it says he goes away. He went away again across the Jordan to the place where John had been baptizing at first, and there he remained. And many came to him, and they said, John did no sign, but everything that John said about this man was true. And many believed in him here, in him there. So where he's at is beyond the Jordan River. As is sometimes the case, there's actually two Bethanies, okay? Sometimes that happens, okay? So there's a Bethany across the Jordan, which is where John was baptizing. In John 1, it talks about this place, Bethany, east of the Jordan. And then there's a city called Bethany, which is closer to Jerusalem, about 2 miles. That's where we're going to be at. But that, those two words are the same word for two different places. So that's where Jesus has gone to, is across the Jordan to where John was at first. And we're going to see, so these signs that John has been talking about, John is very specific with what he's inserting in his gospel. At the end of his book, he says, if I wrote everything that I could write down about Jesus, that would be way too much. That would be, there's not enough books to fill that. There's not enough libraries. And so John, why is John picking what he's picking? He's picked certain signs that he wants to write about. He's chosen certain discourses, certain times Jesus has taught, and it's weaving together. So as you see, water to wine, healing the official's son, paralyzed beggar, feeding of the 5,000, healing a man born blind, more and more, as you look at what he's doing, to me it feels like these are becoming greater and greater. Water to wine, it's like, that's really cool, thank you, but that personally, it's not attached to me. And now he's starting to heal people. Now he's healing somebody who was born blind. And this is where the setting of John 11 takes place, okay? Is across the Jordan as he gets a letter. Whoa, cool effect going on. Look out, I don't even know what's going on. Thank you, whoever did that. Thank you, Microsoft. So John 11. Now a certain man was ill, Lazarus of Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. This is the first time in John that we've heard of Mary and Martha. They have not yet been mentioned. It was Mary who anointed the Lord with ointment and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was ill. So that right there is like a foreshadowing. Do we know yet that Mary is going to anoint Jesus and wipe the ointment with her hair? No, that's going to happen next chapter. So he's trying to piece together who these people are, who they're tied to, but she kind of became known as the one who anointed the Lord with ointment. It was kind of like Mary who anointed the Lord with ointment. I think they two kind of went together as she and her reputation went. It was Mary who anointed the Lord with ointment and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was ill. So the sisters sent to him, saying, Lord, he whom you love is ill. But when Jesus heard it, he said, this illness does not lead to death. It is for the glory of God, so that the Son of God may be glorified through it. So you kind of start to get this picture. He's off, and my understanding is they've got to already have a pretty good relationship. So for him to get a note that says, Lord, from Mary and Martha, he whom you love is ill. And for Jesus to go, I know who they're talking about. I know exactly who you're talking about. Like, there's some association. There's some closeness that they've already established. And here's one of the things that as you dig deeper into this passage. It says, Lord, he whom you love, phileo, the phileo brotherly love of a peer, of somebody in a community, he whom you love, phileo, is ill. It's important. When Jesus heard it, he said, this illness does not lead to death. If you've read this chapter, is that true or false? Yes and no, right? Yes and no. Does this illness lead to death? We know Lazarus died, but that was not his final state. So there's all sorts of caked in irony and meaning. It is for the glory of God. This illness that Lazarus has, there's a higher purpose. It's for God's glory, that the Son might be glorified through it. And this harkens back to a couple chapters when he meets the man born blind, and the man and all around him said, who sinned, this man or his parents? Nobody sinned. It was in his life, this blindness, so that the works of God might be revealed. And Jesus is saying there are purposes to suffering. There are things bigger than your understanding or your convenience, your advantage in suffering, being born blind, having an illness. It is for the glory of God. Now Jesus, now this is important, and John is inserting this very specifically because of what's about to happen. Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. Why would he feel the need to say that? Why would John write that? Because of what Jesus is about to do would not be perceived as very loving. So when they write to Jesus, they say, he whom you love, he whom you phileo as a brother is ill. Now John follows that up with Jesus agape Martha and her sister and Lazarus. There's something going on here. If you really love me as a friend, I'm sick. Please come to my side right now. And John inserts, you got to really understand, Jesus agape loved these people, because what I'm about to say is not going to make sense if all your understanding is phileo love. There's something deeper and bigger going on here. So when he heard that Lazarus was ill, I got the news. He's sick. He's my friend. He's my brother. He stayed 2 days longer in the place where he was. That does not translate in our sense of relational care. I'm sick. I'm in need. There's something going on. And Jesus stays 2 days longer. So immediately, what would be some of the emotions that you guys think Mary and Martha and the almost dead Lazarus would be experiencing as they see that Jesus doesn't come? What would be some of the things there?
Frustration.
Frustration. Anguish. Abandon. Yep.
Not being important enough.
Like devalued.
Yeah.
Yep. I think all of those things, for sure. Absolutely. What's that?
Confused.
Probably confused. Yeah, probably all of the, right? They're probably experiencing all sorts of emotions. So after this, he said to his disciples, after 2 days, let's go to Judea again. And now the disciples have a whole total other track of mind. Rabbi, the Jews were just now seeking to stone you. Are you going to go there? They're not even thinking about Lazarus and Mary and Martha. They're thinking about, we might get in trouble. Like, I don't want to go back where they're just trying to kill you. Right? Jesus answered, are there not 12 hours in the day? If anyone walks in the day, he doesn't stumble because he sees the light of this world. But if anyone walks in the night, he stumbles because the light is not in him. After saying these things, he said to them, our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I go to awaken him. The disciples said to him, Lord, if he's fallen asleep, he'll recover. These are so helpful for me to know I would fit in with the disciples. That I can be so obtuse and so not in line with what God is doing. And the disciples are like, I'm just going to try to help you know this is where we were at when we were following Jesus. We did not always get what he was saying. It's like, thank you. I would have fit right in. Now, Jesus had spoken of his death, but they thought he meant taking rest in sleep. Then Jesus told them plainly, Lazarus has died. All right, guys, that's what I'm trying to say. And for your sake, I am glad that I was not there, so that you may believe. But let us go to him. So Thomas, called the twin, said to his fellow disciples, let us also go that we may die with him. And I used to read that line by Thomas as kind of this like, man, Thomas kind of has this understanding spiritually, like, yeah, it's like, let's go die with Jesus. We're gonna in part, I think it was actually a very like, oh, great. We're going back to where they're just trying to kill him. If you want to go, I guess we'll go die with you. You know, that's what's going to happen. Because that's the state of where they're really at, is we do not want to be in trouble with those who are in authority. We're all going to die. Now, when Jesus came, he found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days. Bethany was near Jerusalem, about 2 miles off, and many of the Jews had come to Martha and Mary to console them concerning their brother. So when Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went and met him, but Mary remained seated in the house. Martha said to Jesus, most of what we said we would probably feel, Lord, if you had been here, my brother wouldn't have died. I can just imagine her mulling over as she sees Lazarus slip more and more closer to death. Why isn't Jesus here? Why didn't he come? We sent to him. If you had been here, Lord, my brother would not have died. But even now, I know that whatever you ask from God, God will give you. So there's a number of things here. First is the tradition of Jewish community is to mourn and grieve together. And it's standard, like bare minimum, 1 week. And if you've got friends, if you've got family, there were people that would even be hired to be like more or less professional mourners. Like, I'll be with you. I will weep and wail with you. I will offer prayers with you while your loved one is passed and you are in mourning. So all these people, whether they're friends or family or they've been hired to mourn with them, are with them crying, mourning, and Jesus comes, and the very first thing Martha has to say is this state of emotion of let down, disappointment. In some ways, a lot of judging. You did the wrong thing, Jesus. But even now, I know that whatever you ask, and as I read that, I go, is that just her trying to muster up faith? Like, oh, I know I should find the good thing in death somehow? Or is there authentic, real faith there that she's saying, I really believe, even though the time has passed when I wanted you to come through, that you can still do things? I think it might be more of the second. I think it's still uninformed, but it's still her saying, I have faith in you, Jesus. And Jesus says to her, your brother will rise again. Martha said to him, I know that he will rise again in the resurrection on the last day. So she has this hope. One day, I know, God, somehow you're going to use this death for your good. Jesus says to her, I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me, though he die, yet shall he live. And everyone who lives and believes in me shall never die. Do you believe this? Do you really get this? She said to him, yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, who is coming into the world. Martha's faith was at this place where she goes, I believe enough to know that Lazarus will come back again someday. That's where I'm at. And in her doubt and in her anguish and in the frustration of Jesus not coming through, Jesus says, you have all of me. I'm all here. I am the resurrection and the life. Everything you need that you're looking, go, I know God at some point will do this. Jesus says, I can feel that right now. I'm here. All of my being can do that. I can meet that need. So when she had said this, she goes back, she finds Mary, right? She went and called her sister, saying in private, the teacher's here, he's calling you. And when she heard it, she rose quickly and went to him. Now Jesus had not yet come into the village. He's still far away off. He was still in the place where Martha had met him. When the Jews who were with her were in the house consoling her, saw Mary rise quickly and go out, they followed her, supposing that she was going to the tomb to weep there. So more mourning, more grieving. When Mary came to where Jesus was, saw him, she fell at his feet, saying to him the same exact thing. And I wonder if as they were grieving, they were just in that place together. Why wasn't Jesus here? If he had been here, our brother would not have died. They share the same exact sentence. If you had been here, my brother would not have died. Jesus has a different response with Mary. When he saw her weeping, and the Jews who had come with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in his spirit and greatly troubled. Now that's a really nice way of saying what it actually says there. The being deeply moved in his spirit. It really is a sense of he was so caught up with this anger and disturbance. Sometimes it's used for when a horse is snorting in anger. That's the deeply moved. It was this emotional turmoil that Jesus enters into, that he sees as all of them are mourning this death of Lazarus. And he enters into the emotion of those that are with him. And one of the things Jeremy said is absolutely true. God does not change. He is immutable. And yet, God can be deeply moved. God has emotion. Do you think of God being deeply moved? Do you think of Jesus as somebody who expresses emotions? Disturbed by sadness and by those that are grieving. If you read through the Old Testament, you can't get over how many times the prophets are saying, God is jealous. God, why have you abandoned him? It's like you've abandoned your lover. There's this emotion that God has. He is the same. His character remains the same, but God is moved. Jesus is moved. Jesus is empathetic with where they're at. And he says to them, where have you laid him? They said to him, Lord, come and see. Simple verse, Jesus wept. Jesus wept. We share this in our relational skills of empathy. Did Jesus know that he was going to raise Lazarus? Did he know that this sickness does not end in death? He's already told us that it does. And yet, he enters into that emotion. And not just in a shallow way, like, I'm kind of sad with you guys, but if you stick with me, this is going to end up really well. Doesn't do that. He enters fully into that, and he's deeply moved and troubled and weeps with them. So the Jews said, see how he, phileo, loved him. Now we see that phileo love. Why wasn't this here before? Why wasn't this here before? Because some of them said, could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man also have kept this man from dying? What's the process, Lord? Why are you doing this? It could have just been so much simpler. Sickness healed. And then we wouldn't have had all this mourning and had all of this pain that we've gone through. In death, we find the intersection of God's great love and God's great power. And we're tempted to say, it's got to be one of that. He'll keep me from bad dying things in his love and his power, or he's completely absent because there are bad things. Could not he have prevented this, right? And one of the phrases that the Bible doesn't use of God is that he's the great preventer. It says he's the great deliverer. And there's a big difference between preventing and delivering, right? So in preventing, when we go, God is got to be in the process of preventing. It's this place of, why did this happen? You could have prevented this. It didn't have to be this way. You had power for others. Why not for us? And those are really real. What's amazing to me is Jesus doesn't rebuke or say, Mary and Martha, you guys are way out of line. I'm the Son of God. I was doing important things, okay? He doesn't say any of that. He enters into that with them. He understands that we don't always get it, as he is the shepherd and we are the sheep. He doesn't say you're not allowed to say that. And so what he does do is he says, I understand your expectations, your dreams, your hopes, and that they have collided with my purposes and what I've been doing. And I'm not going to say, let's sweep that under the rug and pretend that didn't happen. And here's a really cool coffee mug with a verse on it. He doesn't do any of that. He enters right into the sadness with them, and he says, you have all of me. Those are Jesus' two answers to the disappointment of him not loving the way people wanted him to love. He says, you have all of me. I am the resurrection and the life. My whole being is here to fill every need you might have. And I'm sad with you. I'm sad with you, and I weep with you as well. That is what he offers them. most of life's losses are way deeper than things that you could ever get back, whether through time or money. That person on the left, I believe it's pronounced Johnny. I used to always say Joni, but Johnny Erickson Tata. And the guy on the right is Nick Vucevic. And countless others. Yourself. Me. There's times where you go, that did not feel like God's agape love. Johnny Erickson taught it when she was a girl. She dove into shallow end of a pool thinking it was the deep end. Paralyzed her the rest of her life. Nick Vucevic, born without limbs. That was him from birth. What led Nick Vucevic to say, I want to follow Jesus? If you read and hear his testimony, it was him reading John 9 of the man born blind and Jesus saying, I put this in your life for a reason and I'm good. And those two things, you could say, well, this certainly doesn't feel good. This wouldn't be the way I would plan things. And you can choose, if you're Nick Vucevic, go, I don't buy that. That's not good. I'm not going to do that. Or you can say, I don't understand it. I receive your care. I receive your purposes. But I don't get it, but I know I can hold on to you. And the two options here is as we work through grief, as you work through life's losses, the very human thing to do is to stuff down, to resent, to judge. And all those things can be real. All those things, as you see Mary and Martha, they're wrestling through those. But if you make it, you just say, that's going to be my pattern forever, is to hold this against someone else, to hold this against God, to be constantly in a state of you should have. That will never end in spiritual good fruit. That will never lead to resurrection life. That's a very human thing to do. Or Jesus shows this way of entering into grief. The way through grief is to experience it. And it's so, so easy to say, I want to push it aside. I want it to go away. I want to cope with it. I want to find somewhere else to get this off of me. Grief is like this jacket that can feel so strong. And Jesus enters right into it. And he feels it and he walks through it. Look at the end of Lamentations as they see Jerusalem destroyed. Jeremiah, the weeping prophet. You, O Lord, reign forever. Your throne endures to all generations. Why do you forget us forever? Why do you forsake us for so many days? Restore us to yourself, O Lord, that we might be restored. Renew our days as of old. This is the last phrase of Lamentations. Unless you have utterly reject us and you remain exceedingly angry with us. There's times where we just wait in that place of grief of, I completely do not understand what's going on, God, how this happened. Why are you so distant? Where are you, Lord? Most of the Psalms are lament Psalms. I don't know if you know that. Most of the Psalms are not, hey, everybody, let's rise up and praise the Lord. Most of the Psalms are, God, where have you gone? People are attacking me all day long. What we have, thankfully, is we're on this side of seeing what Jesus' works are. If you're Jeremiah, what assurances do you have? Is the Lord exceedingly angry and going to reject him forever? There's a lot more faith, I think, for Jeremiah to have to understand that than for us to go, this is hard. I'm going to bring this to the Lord. And he is not exceedingly angry forever, but I know it feels that way right now. So Jesus, deeply moved again, that same idea, deeply disturbed, came to the tomb. It was a cave, and a stone lay against it. Jesus said, take away the stone. Martha, the sister of the dead man, said to him, Lord, by this time there will be an odor, for he has been dead 4 days. And there's something here that just catches me. Is she so desires for her brother to come back to life, but there's still something within her that goes, but you're going to get all the stinky stuff. You're going to have to go into the darkest, nastiest things that we have here. So do you want him to heal and go into the stinky stuff, or do you want to keep your stinky stuff wrapped up under? I take that the odor from the tomb is, that'd be really nice just to kind of keep my grief, to keep my pain buried away. It'd be really nice to not smell dead stuff. That'd be great. But if Jesus is going to touch it, we're going to have to bring the stinky stuff out. We're going to have to let that odor come. Jesus said to her, "Did I not tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God?" So they took away the stone. Jesus lifted up his eyes and said, "Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I said this on account of the people standing around, that they may believe that you sent me." When he had said these things, he cried out with a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out!" And the man who had died came out, his hands and feet bound with linen strips, and his face wrapped with a cloth. And Jesus said to them, "Unbind him and let him go." That's the story. So as they look back, as Mary and Martha look back now, what emotions do you think they have on that whole experience? What would be some that you guys think of? Not in the moment Jesus didn't come, but as it all comes to a closure. What's that?
Gratitude?
Amazed? Bewildered? Greater faith? Yeah. I think a lot of those things, and I think if God is going to say, "I am powerful and loving enough to raise people from the dead," somebody's going to have to die for him to do that, right? How are we going to see you have all of me as the resurrection and the life unless something truly has no power in itself? There was no good work Lazarus could do to say, maybe he did this and that. He was dead, all the way dead. And as Jesus prays, what I love is that it's just this simple relational prayer. He's not hooping and hollering and trying to get the Father to listen. It's just this simple relational prayer. "Father, I thank you that you always hear me." And just a simple, "Lazarus, come out." And so for this great act of raising somebody from the dead, it's just this simple abiding relationship that he's in. No fancy prayer. And Lazarus comes out with all of the grave clothes on him. So how does this story hit you? Do you see, man, Jesus is kind of doing a workaround here. Like, why couldn't he just say, "I'm the resurrection and the life," and heal Lazarus? How does John saying this is Jesus' agape love for Martha and Mary and Lazarus, for me, where it hits to go, God has things in my life that will feel very, very unpleasant. They will feel like death if they aren't death themselves. And that does not mean his agape love has abandoned me forever. Those two can be true together. That his love doesn't always mean that he will always do what is most advantageous for me, what makes sense in my mind. And that can be really hard. It can be really hard because all of our expectations, our losses that we experience, are almost always tied, the deepest ones, to my expectation and faith on God. If God said who he really said he was, this would not have happened. And the only way to wrestle through that is to enter into that in reality with God, in his presence, with him. Whether that's through counseling with others or your own prayer, through journaling, through something like TPM, to bring your heart into God's presence and say, "This is how I'm truly feeling in every sense of the dimension, in all of this loss." Because Jesus doesn't show contempt for the doubt and sadness of the loss of dreams and hopes. He doesn't show contempt for that. He understands that. But he also doesn't want you to run away because of that. There's something deeper that he wants to do. He says, "I'm sad with you,
and you have all of me. I'm sad with you, and you have all of me. That is how he answers and how he comes through that. Grief is a part of the human experience, and we grow through feeling it. You know, I used to think great faith is crossing oceans. Great faith is preaching to powerful people. Great faith is doing these great works for God. And what this chapter, what the Gospels often shares, great faith is allowing God to do a great work through you. Would you be willing to say that tomb that's been closed and is odorous and quite stinky, I'm willing to take the stone off and let you into Jesus, that place in me that I don't like to have you see? Wrestling with God through bad, painful things and finding him, hearing him, that is great faith. That is great faith. Some of the things that have happened to us in this room, that are still happening in this room. You have great faith as you let Jesus into that tomb. And you bring your hopes, you bring those dashed dreams that haven't yet come true, that you still hold out. Jesus weeps with you. Jesus feels with you. We feel together. To be the people that know how to weep with each other and grieve. This is Jesus' heart. This is his agape love. This is what it means for Jesus to agape love Mary, Martha, and Lazarus. And for you and I, he says, you have all of me. Whoever believes in me, though he die, yet shall he live. Everyone who lives and believes in me shall never die. Do you believe this? Do you believe that? That everything lost can be restored. That there's no pain of earth that heaven can't heal. And that Jesus weeps with you in that. That's the transformative work that he does, that he's still doing, that he's offering today. And that's an ongoing process. Johnny Erickson Tada said there's about 3 years where she was near suicide. She did not enjoy her existence. So as you read this and as you deal with loss, this isn't a one-time, oh, I read it, now I'm good. This is a process of grieving, of working through these things. Understanding that loss was deep. That person's life was real. That relationship is gone. But will you let God walk with you through that? Will you let others walk with you through that and experience the resurrection and the life? Lord, all of this can be real trite, I know. Can feel like just words. Only you know the depth of pain in each person's heart through the different losses that they've experienced. And you see in us right now where the things that we had hoped and dreamed, that we thought in your goodness you would do, haven't been done, never did get done. And I just pray for each of us to be open to the idea of you weeping and feeling and being deeply moved with us, and walking with us and being okay for however long it takes to work through that pain. I thank you that your love knows no bounds. There's no depth of darkness. There's nothing you haven't heard. You're not going to say that I've never heard. That's offensive. I can't believe you'd say that. I thank you that you welcome that in our hearts. And pray, Lord, that you would give us faith to open up the tombs where the dead things are, that you might bring things to life. In your name, amen. All right, well, thanks. And reminder, we are sharing a meal. If you didn't bring any food, more than welcome to stick around. If you have feedback on elementary school stuff, classroom teaching stuff, please give me some feedback. Talk through it together. Thanks.